Hello, Indigenous Earthlings. Here we are again, seven revolutions later, balancing into yet another Express Yourself. I'm Luke Messler. You just heard the Gotan Project with a tango-ish tune called Tango Canción. Is there a sexier dance in the universe than the tango? Well, this weekend provides an opportunity to answer that question and to see a tango perform live in downtown Carbondale at the first salon of the new year tomorrow evening at the Launch Pad. And here to tell us all about this newest version of the salon is one of its curators, Alya Howe. Hello, Alya.
Hi, Luke. Thanks for having us.
And welcome back.
Thank you.
Happy New Year.
Oh, you too.
Also joining us by phone is Sean Erickson, the USA Stage Tango Champion. Hello, Sean.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Joining us also here in the studio is another featured performer in tomorrow's salon, trumpeter Tim Fox. Welcome, Tim.
Thank you. Hello. Well, pleasure to be here.
And Io is here, too. He is a dancer involved in tomorrow's presentation. Welcome.
Thank you, Luke.
Glad to have you all.
Brilliant to be here.
Yes. Wow. Well, another stunning program put together by you. How do you source all these amazing artists?
I think it's a little, not a little, a lot of divine intervention, but also just really thinking what would inspire a new year, a leap into creativity, and different artists in really diverse disciplines playing in their art form. And I notice throughout the year different artists when I'm traveling around and listen to when I'm in different cities and ask if they're ever coming into the area, please let me know. And then I've been knocking on Tim's door about the salon for a long time. I saw Io dance in the fashion show and I thought, oh my gosh, he's a beautiful mover. And I was working on the solo with Megan Londi Shapiro, and she hurt her ankle. And my first phone call out was to, or text was out to Io, would you be interested in playing at massively short notice, like 2 weeks, at putting this solo called Refugee, which dealt with my concern about immigration and refugees from that bigger work I did last November, called The Herd and Herd Consciousness, about herd consciousness or how I perceive it. And I'm thrilled to have a completely different flavor developing in this solo with Io.
How about that?
And then we have a writer who I've admired for a long time, Michelle Marshaladon from Denver. And she's a writer for Sports Illustrated, Elephant Journal, a yogini, and is always searching and looking at ways to be more articulate, playful, and free, and creative. And so she's going to present a talk, really, being an author, on fostering the creative process and how to finish that book. And there are so many writers here. I thought this would really dip into the community that is writing their memoirs, how to complete it. And she's completed three books now, some in collaboration, some all written by herself. And she's funny. She makes me giggle, which is always a delight when you're in a how do I finish this project? But her talk for us is going to be about creating art is just like yoga. She's an amazing yoga teacher. You have to do the donkey work. Some of it'll suck, and then miraculously some of it'll be very good. And somehow these things come together, just like the salon does, and the balance and the richness of the program. And I can talk about Lucy Weld. My daughter was curating an exhibit in Boulder and had this young singer-songwriter singing, and she just hypnotized me. And I said, sometime would you like to come up and play for the salon? And she said yes this time round. So she's coming up with a friend, William Oberlander, on guitar, and they're going to share three of their original singer-songwriting collaborations. And Rick Minkoff is a local playwright. He's been based mostly in San Francisco, and his play is just a force. And he's a retired trial lawyer who's performed with extensive community theater, ran a local theater company in San Francisco Bay Area, and he's written a personal play about serving the melon, and it shows us the dilemma of an early childhood of parental emotional abuse and humiliation. And it's a difficult piece to watch. And that piece, actually, for those of you who are bringing children, comes right after the intermission. And I will actually advise you just to, and I'll have a few people there, just to have your children hang outside and play for that piece, because it's intense and it's an adult piece. But I think it's really valuable and relevant.
Yeah, very relevant. And then you have the Tango Champion.
Yes, but you can talk to Sean on the telephone.
Hi, Sean. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well today.
I had no idea there could be such a thing as a Tango Champion.
Yes, it was a bit of a surprise for Cynthia, my partner, and I as well. We were here in Denver, Colorado, and there was a friend who actually put together an event, and we participated in and won. And the prize was to go to San Francisco for where there was the national competition. And so, you know, we had been dancing and performing quite a bit, but at first our plan was not to keep competing until we there was a few. You know, once we knew that we were going to go there, we kind of put all of our efforts into that, and we're very fortunate.
Now, do you get to choose the music that you dance to, or is it like compulsory? Do the judges provide and you just have to wing it? How does that work?
Right. So there's actually two different styles in competitive tango. So what Cynthia and I do is we do performances. So we pick our song and we often choreograph each element of it, and we show that off. But there's tango is generally an improvised dance, and it's a social dance. And so there is also where the judges will pick the music, and you don't know what song you're going to be dancing to until they announce it and then start playing it. So that is another possibility.
When you're in a competition, a tango competition, what are the judges looking for?
That's a good question. I think that beyond anything, they're looking for quality dance. And it's a bit of, you can talk for hours about what that means, But I would say it's much easier to just see it. I think when you see good dancers, you know that that's what you want to see. And, you know, there's some technical aspects, there's some musicality, but it's more of they are looking for good dance and quality dance.
Well, I watched several videos of you dancing with Cindy, as well as others dancing, too. I was a little surprised to see how much of your time is spent on tiptoes. You guys must have awesome calves.
Yes, it does. It takes a bit of balance.
Uh-huh. What makes a good tango, Eric?
For the dance, I would say that For me, I find that the connection with the partner is what makes a good tango to me.
Oh.
I think that because it's the interaction between the couple, that's what I find most important in a good tango dance.
Huh. Sean, did you work on that extensively with your current partner? Does that chemistry come through lots and lots of rehearsal?
Yes, I think it comes through lots of rehearsal, and I think it comes through a lot of trust. I think that when Cindy and I can trust each other, then the connection comes naturally. Whenever there's a move or a choreography that we're not yet certain about, it's much harder to find it.
How did tango happen in your life, Sean? How did that happen for you?
So I went to undergraduate in UC Santa Cruz in California. And before I was in college, I actually, I knew people danced, but, you know, none of my male friends danced. This was not something we did until I actually had a friend my first week in college who invited me to a breakdancing class. And I had never taken a dance class before, but I found that was something that I knew I should have been doing, because I found that that was me. And so pretty quickly I tried to find as many dance classes, as many opportunities to dance as I could. And I was fortunate to have a club that taught Argentine tango at UC Santa Cruz. And so I joined that, and they would do local performances. I really got hooked. And so I spent a summer abroad in Argentina. When I would go back home to the Bay Area, there's a phenomenal community. And when I came out to Colorado for graduate school, I was fortunate enough to find my partner and find some really fantastic tango teachers out in Colorado. And so it really took off from there.
How about that?
And I think finding a partner is an extraordinarily rare and wonderful thing. I think in all of my dance career, Luca, I've had two dance partners that we really sync together, and I was fortunate to dance with them for a few years in a row. And just listening to Sean talking about dance, dance is a nonverbal art form, so it's tough to actually explain and express really tangibly what it's about. But you can go to a workshop on Saturday morning at 11 to 12:30 and on Sunday, 12:15 to 1:45, to study with Sean and Cindy. Ooh. And how amazing to actually do that before seeing them in the salon, so you actually have an idea physically of how smooth and effortless they make it look, but yeah, how tough it really is.
I'll bet.
Yeah,
like anything. Well, let's bring the other dancer into the conversation. You, sir, how did you get involved with dance? What kind? You don't do tango, obviously.
Luke, no. I actually come from a martial arts background. Oh. And just really appreciate movement. And the more I study movement, the more I really appreciate the non-combative approach to it, and how you can harmonize energies with partners and really move in conjunction. I also love how movement really connects my inner world to the outer world, the people and spaces around me.
Interesting. And did you study dance, or did you came through it to it through martial arts? Was that the extent of your dance studies?
Yeah, I can remember taking a year or two in preschool, and that was the last class of dance that I took.
How about that?
But getting involved with the fashion show and all the wonderful dancers there, and just taking workshops, and you know, I'm just as an amateur dancer, it's a real gift to be able to work with and dance under and with really nationally known and fabulous artists that we have here in the Valley.
Huh. It sounds like you're performing a piece that Alia choreographed. Did you find it challenging?
No, it was a delight. It really was wonderful because this was especially wonderful because I got to be a part of the choreography in that she gives me direction and I search inside myself how I want to express that. And then she gives me just beautiful response on you know how to elaborate, how to draw out more, how to reach deeper. So it's been a really collaborative process, and so it's been a great experience.
So this sounds like it might be your solo debut. Is that right?
I believe
that?
So.
Nice. Congratulations. That's great. What can you say about him and his work?
I can say that immense gratitude for being willing to jump in the deep end with me, because how I draw movement out from having started off as a rather technical dancer and then looking really to find the authentic expression, and then working in Carbondale with people who have different movement backgrounds and levels of performance experience and technical experience, it takes time to develop a vocabulary and grow it to really speak. And the speed of which Aya works with me is incredible. And, if we had all day, every day, I just would. Well, I'm looking forward to that in the future.
She's grooming you, dude.
No, thank you, Aya, really. Yeah.
It's a delight.
Are you in this year's fashion show?
I'm going to participate. Yeah, I really support all the dancers that are there, and love just seeing what comes about by taking a theme and elaborating on it and working with others to suss out what that's all about.
Huh. Well, that sounds really great. We also have Tim Fox joining us here in the studio.
Many
would know Tim as a jazz trumpeter around the Valley, most recently with Josefina, I guess, right?
That's correct, right.
But she moved away.
She moved back to Buenos Aires.
Yeah.
And Sean, as you were talking, I had many fond memories of my wife June and I visiting Buenos Aires with Josefina. And I sat with Josefina's father for 2 hours, and he gave me the course on the music part of tango. And then and he was a jazz fan too. He had an album collection rivaling KDNK's, actually. And he is blind. And he spoke a peculiar Tarzan English with Josefina interpreting, but we had such a great time, and I learned so much. And there's so many parallels between the tango, and that's what I'm sitting here listening to, and all the connections that there are between, you know, as Alia said at the beginning, well, these were a lot of diverse artists here, but we're connected more than we are diverse, I think. And so the tango and jazz kind of paralleled in their development, starting with refugees on the coast in Buenos Aires, and of course New Orleans and jazz. And Cuba played a huge role in adding the rhythm that we all listen to every day almost and dance to. And so I was just, you know, really thinking, and I love how connected all of these arts are. And that's what I like to think about. Even the yogini you talked about, and that's been a big part of my development on as a performer, is to try to separate the donkey work, as you said. And I want to kind of, in the salon, give an idea about what that kind of work is for trumpet, and then contrast that to the performance, which is just play. So all of those, I'm just very excited about all of these connections that I can sense that will happen at the salon.
Are you playing a solo piece tomorrow at the salon?
Yes, and that's kind of a particular challenge for me, because I really chose music because of its collaborative nature. And but there's another collaboration that happens when I'm performing, and that's between me and an audience. So hopefully there will be some chemistry there as well, and I'll feed off of that and maybe help it along.
And is it a jazz piece, or is it a classical trumpet piece? What is it?
The trumpet, for me, I did take lessons on the trumpet. I play piano as well, and I just picked that up from my dad, watching him play. I really didn't take lessons until I kind of had to get into college for a few months. So the piano, I'm sort of self-taught by watching my father. The trumpet I took lessons on, and I can survive in the Messiah and in weddings and in some orchestral work. But that's what it is, surviving. Jazz is what my dad played on the piano. Jazz is what I heard. And barbershop, we sang barbershop. And that's kind of what's really in me. So that's what I'm going to share, is what's really inside of me. And that's jazz.
Well, you have that shiny trumpet in your lap. I'd love to hear a little bit of trumpet.
Well, you sure?
Yay.
I'd love to play something for you. This is I decided on just moments ago. I don't even know the title right now. Well, I'll play it, and then I'll remember the title.
Okay. It's a deal. If you just joined us, this is the Express Yourself Show on KDNK with Tim Fox, about ready to toot his own horn.
There will never be another you. Warming up.
Thank you, Tim Fox. Wonderful on the trumpet. Yeah.
Thank you.
You're right. You know, the trumpet sounds different when it's a solo instrument, doesn't it?
Oh, it does. It's very transparent. Yeah. You can really hear the breath. And, yeah. And that's where the movement also I was relating to in the dancing is I'm moving air and vibration. Uh-huh. But it's all movement for
yeah.
sure.
Yeah. And you have to double breathe, don't you? Or oh, what do yeah, they call
I have
that?
To, I have to exhale.
Circular
sometimes.
Breathing.
And sometimes circular breathing. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
But just to blow off the carbon monoxide sometimes. So it's a windy project.
Yeah. It's one of the things that I really love about the salon is the intimacy and the invitation for single instrument, single artist to really take us into the instrument and the nature of the instrument and what's available to play on the instrument and the range of creativity and expression. I know so little, Tim, about the trumpet that I'm really excited for what you'll be sharing with us tomorrow evening. It reminds us, we had a solo timpanist come in and play and he filled the space. But just showing us the modulations that they do with the pedal and the range of sounds and how music is written for the timpani in particular. And often in more ensemble instruments, which I tend to think of the trumpet as, or as having solos in bigger bodies of work, just what is the nature of the trumpet purely has escaped me until now, so I'm beyond excited for tomorrow.
Well,
I'm looking forward to that too.
Yeah, it's an exciting program. Let's talk a little bit about some of the mundane details before I let you go. Tickets still available?
Tickets still available. They're $25. You can purchase them at the door. Doors open around 5:45, 6 o'clock for a sharp 6:30 shop. Or you can purchase the tickets online at the Salon Carbondale, eventbrite.com. If you are coming to purchase your ticket day of, cash or check is really, really helpful. The show starts at 6:30 p.m. and it's at the Launchpad in Carbondale. And there are six expressions of different artists. And there are 7, 8, 9, 10 artists performing in total.
How about that? That's another great program, Allie. Good job.
Thank you, Luke.
And thank you, Tim Fox, for joining us.
My pleasure, Luke. Thanks for having me.
And Io the Dancer, I appreciate it.
Wonderful to be here.
And Sean Erickson by telephone from Denver. Thank you, Sean.
Thank you so much for having us.
All righty. Stay with us. There is more to come on today's Express Yourself. The Rassle the Castle Fat Tire Bike and Snowshoe Race returns to Redstone tomorrow morning. And here to tell us about it is the Health and Wellness and Aquatics Coordinator for the Town of Carbondale, Margaret Donnelly.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well. Welcome back.
Oh, thank you.
So, you're doing it again.
We are. Barely.
What do you mean?
We have been up there every day for the last week.
Shoveling snow onto the course.
Pretty much, yeah. We have been crossing our fingers and praying and hoping. Nick from Aloha Mountain Cyclery and I went up and we rode the course this morning. And it's the first time in a week and a half where it actually had snow over the entire course.
Nice.
So we're hoping for that. And I just checked the weather and it says it was snowing up there until 6 tonight. So we're going to keep our fingers crossed that that's the case because we're taking a bunch of stuff up tonight.
Well, imagine if it's not 100% snowy course, that makes it kind of challenging for the riders.
Well, actually, this year, it was great for riding. So what we're doing is we're actually changing the snowshoe portion of the race to a winter run race. And so we're actually suggesting no snowshoes. There's not enough snow for snowshoes. But we would like yak tracks and we would like our winter ice boots and poles because the road leading up and especially the parking lot is a little icy. There's two spots along the 5K course that have some ice, and we're going to put some signs up just for those immediate areas. And we're also requesting that if you have a spare pair of yak tracks, bring them. I'm going to bring a little metallic Sharpie. You can write your name on them, give them to your friend, and then make sure your friends and neighbors give them back to you. We just want everybody to be safe. Mm. But because this is a benefit for the Redstone Community Association, for Callaway Young Cancer Center, we were really hoping not to cancel it, but but keep everybody as safe as possible.
How many people are you expecting, Margaret?
I don't know. Last year we had, I think, 48 racers mm-hmm. and about the same for runners. So I would be ecstatic for 100. It would be great to have that many. And we last year we had short notice, so we've been advertising. So I think Aloha said that they were getting calls from Breckenridge for the fat bike race. And I know I've been taking calls for the most part throughout the day for the race today. And mostly because I just wanted people to know that it's a fun race. That's what we're kind of here for. So we are going to do a $150 cash prize for the middle finisher. just because we want people to stay safe out there as they're going out and just kind of remember that that's kind of what this Wrestle the Castle is all about.
Yeah.
Is just to go out in winter because there's a lot of extreme stuff going on out there and not all of us are extreme, but we really just like to get out and get in nature.
Where does this course go?
So the course will start at Redstone Inn. So we ask if you come that you park in the upper parking lot at the Redstone Inn or along the street. The lower parking lot is for staff and for the start line and for the bonfire. And then so the bikers and the racers will both go up the road to the Redstone Castle around the lower lawn where the gazebo is and then up some forest roads behind the castle. The bikers will do the loop. I believe they do it 3 times, and the runners will just do it once. So it's a 5K for the runners or walkers and or dogs, because it is a dog friendly race as well.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Huh.
And so, so just bring your Yak Trex ice and boots. Aloha will have bikes available if you want to try your hand at fat biking. And so the race for individuals, whether you do the winter run or the fat bike race, it's $30 for adults and $25 for 10 to 17-year-olds. If you bring a non-perishable food item, you get $5 off. 9 and under are free. But if you want to try your hand at both races, it's $40 for both races. And you can register for either of those races at the rec center until it closes tonight or online for the next 2 hours. So you can pre-register.
And then you can register the morning of before the race?
You can register the morning of a half an hour prior to the start time of either race. So the fat bike race starts at 9 a.m. and the winter run starts at 10 a.m. So try and be there as early as possible. We're going to start registration at 8:30, but we'll have the table up at 8. So
perfect.
Yeah.
Wow. Anything else you want people to know about this?
Yeah. I wanted to thank, we have a lot of people who have been really generous in donating raffle prizes. So if you're coming to the race and then you stay after, we're going to convene at the inn, and the inn is going to have some free hot chocolate, and then we will give away the prize. Aloha will do their prizes for the race. We're going to do a first place, we'll do a middle place, and we have the oldest and youngest, and then we have the person who traveled the farthest. So we have some prizes for that. And then everybody that stays for either race will get a raffle ticket. And so we have Aloha Mountain Cyclery has donated, the Rec Center, Alpine Bank has donated the cash prizes. Avalanche Ranch is going to donate. They have donated Beaver Creek Lodge, Bonfire Coffee, Coreflex Chiropractic, Cripple Creek Backcountry, Glenwood Hot Springs, Independence Run and Hike, Crystal Dreams Bed and Breakfast, Pepino's, The Poorhouse, Ragged Mountain Sports. We'd like to thank the Redstone Castle for letting us host the race there. RJ Paddywax, Summit Canyon Mountaineering, White House Pizza, Carbondale Creamery, Redstone Inn, Dandelion Inn. We have, and you, thank you for some great CDs, Dos Gringos, and Sunlight Mountain Resort has donated 6 ski passes. So,
wow.
We have a couple night stays that we're going to raffle off, some ski passes and just some meals. So it's going to be great. And it's just a fun atmosphere. So also come and support Redstone, go to the general store, get some, they have some lighter food or the Redstone Inn for lunch afterwards. And then, so that's it for the race.
Wow, that's great. What a remarkable cross-section of support from the community. That's pretty incredible.
Yeah, they have been, they're very supportive of this event. And then I'm going to put my aquatics hat on for 2 seconds. We have a pool survey that we're doing with Carbondale Rec, so please get online or go to the rec center to fill out the pool. We are looking at trying to figure out how to get a new updated pool. And so that survey will help us do that. And then this year, I'm also on the lookout already. It's never too early to start looking for summer jobs. So if you know any teenagers, I'm looking for 11 guards and 5 swim instructors this summer. So that's big shoes to fill. And we have to do it if we want to keep the pool open and operating. And then I have March 31st. Our next event that we're going to be doing for activities for the public is the Easter egg scavenger hunt. And this year I'm going to do something a little bit different. And so I am looking for a lot of town support for that. So I need places to hide my little peeps. So if you're a business or a not-for-profit, I would love your help in helping me put this event on for the town. We had over 66 participants this year, and I'm looking for about 120 this year.
Wow.
Yeah.
How about that? That's great. Well, Margaret Donnelly of the town of Carbondale, thank you so much.
Thank you, Luke.
We appreciate all your work.
Have a good weekend.
All right. Stay with us. More to come on Express Yourself. Well, that's a little taste of the band playing at the Temporary tomorrow night. They're called Space Orphan. Sounds like they know how to make it funky, don't they? Doors at 7, show at 8, tickets and info at taka.org. And, of course, tonight at the Temporary, it's Amy Goodman with a presentation that will benefit Katie and Kay and Taka. And I am told that that show is sold out. But if you are in line at 7 o'clock, that's just about a couple hours here, you might get lucky and snag a standing room only ticket. Well, the 34th Cowboy Poetry Gathering in Elko, Nevada begins in 2 short weeks. There are similar gatherings all around the country, but this one was the first, and it's still the biggest. But it's not all yucks and yodels, as I discovered when I talked to the communications director of the Western Folklife Center, Darcy Minter. Hello, Darcy.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
You're so welcome. Well, the 34th National Poetry Cowboy Poetry Gathering starts in just 2 short weeks. I know that tickets have been on sale since early October to the public, but I see on your website that there are still plenty of events that aren't sold out.
Right. Oh, there's always events that don't sell out. We have 2 kinds of events. We have lots and lots of shows and other things that you can go to with a pass, and those never sell out. And then we have some ticketed shows, and in our smaller theater, sometimes they do. Gets really full. But there's always, we have over 100 different kinds of performances. We have films, dances. We have lots of actual discussions and talks about different things related to our theme or sustainability issues. So there's just a lot going on.
Workshops, exhibitions, and I imagine it's like any other big gathering. A lot of what happens isn't even scheduled. It's happening behind the scenes or, you know, in the bar after the show or whatever.
Well, we do have a wonderful historic bar, which is a real gathering place for people. And you're right. You know, people say that the National Cowboy Poetry Gathering is a great reunion of friends. And I think people meet each other, they make connections, they have similar interests and passions. And a lot goes on outside of the scheduled events. And there's a lot of wonderful fellowship and camaraderie that happens.
Yeah, there is. I was looking at all the bio, the thumbnail sketch bios of all the participants, musicians and poets, and I was struck by something. You know, I always wondered, well, why do they do the gathering in January? Who wants to go to Northern Nevada in January? But I realized that these people are working ranchers. They're not in a career around their poetry. The poetry may be an important part of their life, but it's not their whole life. They're working ranchers. And of course, working ranchers can't do this kind of thing except in January.
Exactly. Yes. And, you know, that is why when it started almost, you know, 34 years ago, 1985, it was, you know, they rounded up poets from all the Western states and invited them to come to Elko. And, you know, it's true. I mean, they're feeding animals in it this time of year, but, you know, usually you can delegate that. So it's the time when they have the least going on. And nowadays, you know, the audience for the event is 40% urban. So people do come from the cities because they love this lifestyle, and maybe they can't participate in it, but they can come to the gathering and get a taste of it.
Well, of course.
And meet these folks who are, you know, living the life and working on the land. So we got a much bigger audience now than we did in the beginning. And it's much more diverse.
And do you think that's because it's gotten a reputation around the country?
I hope so.
I'll bet it has, because, you know, I'm an NPR listener, and I have been all my life, and I probably didn't really become aware of the National Cowboy Poetry Gathering until Baxter Black came along, and I know
right.
that he's not on the bill this year, but he sort of put it on my mental map, and I can just imagine. I mean, looking on your website, which is, by the way, cowboypoetrygathering.org, and looking at the videos and reading the sketches, you know, I guess I'm struck by a number of things. One of them is it's the classic American archetype of the cowboy, and who doesn't appreciate that? No matter where you live or what you do, it's an iconic part of the American story.
Right. And, you know, I think one of the things that really people don't realize about this event, and it's different. There's cowboy poetry gatherings now that, you know, all over the country. And what may be different about ours is that we focus on the contemporary cowboy and rancher, you know. So obviously these traditions that they're still practicing are rooted in the past, in history. But what we're most interested in is what is happening now on ranches and in the rural West. So it really is about the contemporary life of these folks. And, you know, there's a lot of people who love the Old West, and that's great, but that is not our focus.
Yeah. Well, you know, and that's laudable. I think that, you know, a lot of the featured poets talked about it's and it was in the videos too, some of the videos I watched. It looks like they take it upon themselves to reach out to the urban person who never looks up and sees a starlit sky. Or it's sort of their duty to let people know that, hey, we're out here, even though we're just 1% of the American population, we're still out here doing important work, and it's worth it to listen to us.
Right. Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, it's about telling their story.
Yeah.
And I think ranchers, you know, for a lot of years, it goes up and down, but they have felt threatened, you know, by various things, you know, whether it's development or, you know, environmentalism or whatever they're feeling threatened by. They need to let people know what they're doing and how they're doing it and make their story real to people. And I think that's, you know, I think cowboy poetry music accomplishes that. And the fact that there are so many of these gatherings all over the place, I think that it's really helped the cause, so to speak, and gotten the word out about that this is an occupation that is, you know, really beautiful and necessary.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, yeah.
Well, Darcy, this year's theme is Basques and Buckaroos, herding cultures of Basin, Range, and beyond. And looking at your schedule of events and exhibitions and storytelling sessions and discussions, the Basques were and are an integral part of the story of the American West. Tell me a little bit about what's going on as far as highlighting the Basques in this year's gathering.
Yeah, well, you know, Elko and Northern Nevada and Southern Idaho, you know, are Basque strongholds, I guess you'd say, that a lot of Basque people came over to herd sheep. And are not so much herding sheep anymore, but they are, you know, ranching or they own businesses, and they're a huge part of our community in Elko. We really wanted to honor that. And we, great thing is that we got people from our community, from Boise, which is a huge Basque community, Reno, involved in putting this program together, which is really great. And we are bringing people from all over the West, who are Basque performers. So the Basques have an oral tradition that is called Bertzalaritza, and it is a kind of poetry, but it is sung in their language, which is called Euskara. And it's improvised. So someone will give them a theme on the spot, and they need to improvise a song and sing it. And it kind of goes back and forth between these competitors where, you know, they sort of are sparring to see who can come up with the best song. And it's incredibly popular in the Basque Country. Every 4 years, they have a national championship, and 14,000 plus people will attend these championships in these giant stadiums, and it's really quite something. So we are bringing over two women, Bertzalari, one of whom was the only woman to have ever won the national championship, and she just won it again for the second time in December. So we're really excited, you know, to have the best Bertzalari, you know, coming all the way from Europe to Elko to share their tradition with us.
Wow, that is really impressive. Yeah,
it's really cool.
I'll bet. You know, it's enough to get me up off my ass and drive west to Elko.
Come on over.
Yeah, that's really cool. How about that?
Yeah.
But that's not all. There's a lot of other things Basque related. Tell me some of them.
Right. So, of course, we have Basque music and Basque dancing. We have cooking workshops that are focused on Basque food traditions.
Which are exquisite, by the way. I went to a Basque restaurant in Winnemucca, Nevada. And it's a famous one. It's in a famous old hotel. And it was just amazing. Amazing.
Yes. And we have those in Elko, too. The Star Hotel is, you know, a big Basque restaurant in Elko. And those hotels were home to the sheep herders. When they came in off the range, they would stay in these hotels, and then they would come down and eat family style for dinner. And they don't function that way anymore, but the restaurants remain, and they still ring the dinner bell at 6 o'clock as if the sheep herders were going to be coming downstairs for dinner. And it's still all family style and quite yummy. Yeah,
really succulent for sure. Mostly sheep-based, so you got to love lamb chops. But
lots of lamb, and garlic, lots of garlic.
Yes.
Which is yummy. So we also have a lot of workshops. We've got cooking workshops, but we've also got some Basque-related workshops having to do with, you know, some of the material culture that they make. One is a walking stick called a maquila. So we are having a carving workshop where they're going to carve their own walking sticks, and also a workshop with a percussion instrument called a pandero, which is a lot like a tambourine. So there's just, and then we have discussions about all kinds of Basque, you know, history. We have talks and demos and also an exhibit on Basque arbor glyphs, which are tree carvings. And a lot of people have documented a lot, you know, these aspen trees that have people have carved images in, really all the way back to the Basque sheep herders and cowboys who carved in these trees. And so there is just a lot. If you're interested in Basque culture, even if you're not and you're curious, you will learn a lot at this year's poetry gathering.
Yeah, that's a really special thing. Yeah, you know, the Basques have an interesting culture, and it's interesting to me how they shape themselves around their American experience, which, like any other immigrant, you know, their culture changes, but they also change the culture around them. And that's an interesting dialogue.
Yeah, true.
Anything else that people need to know about this year's event?
Well, we also have, you know, a lot of returnees, favorite performers that people love to hear, both poets and musicians. We've got, you know, Michael Martin Murphy and Waddy Mitchell, Riders in the Sky, plus a lot of new voices, too, that are coming that we're really excited about. So there's always, you know, poetry and music. We have dances, really wonderful dances. So I know a lot of people are kind of into Western dancing, two-step, rodeo swing. We have all of that. We have both workshops and we have three different dances in the evenings that are really fun, very lively.
You
know, if anybody's interested in seeing all of the things we've got going on, it's all on our website at nationalcowboypoetrygathering.org. And tickets are, we still have lots of tickets left. We have passes. A three-day pass is $80. And it's good all day, February 1st, 2nd, and 3rd. And activities start at 9 a.m. and go till midnight. And on Saturday night, we have a midnight dance that goes till 2 a.m. So so there's lots going on.
Are there still hotel rooms available in Elko?
There are, yes. Elko has built a lot of new hotels, and so there are plenty of them. You know, that's all good. Different sort of, you know, economy and all the way up. So people should be able to find, you know, whatever they can afford.
Great. Darcy Minter, I want to thank you for joining us and talking about this year's gathering. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much for having me on.
And stay tuned for next week's Express Yourself. I'll be speaking with a Wyoming Basque musician and also two Colorado cowboy poets. So that's coming up on next week's Express Yourself. Again, you can get more information at National Poetry, cowboypoetrygathering.org.